Okay, this is the 45th Derech Hashem class. We are in the third section, the second chapter, paragraph 5 or 6, around in there. And I'm going to do a little review, even though the last class was a little review, because this is a very complicated section. So this section is called Seergy. And in Hebrew it's called Hapulot B'Shemot Uvachishuf. Right, so it's the actions using the names of Hashem, Shemot Hashem, names of Hashem, or magic. So, okay, so this is what we're talking. This whole chapter is about how to transcend the bonds of nature, physical boundaries, I guess just period, put a period right there, how to transcend physical boundaries. So there's two primary pathways. One is through using the names of Hashem, and one is through magic. And they're both available to us, depending on our skill level, what we have, if we can accomplish it or not. Right, so the first part is really, it's really about this whole concept. What is it? So let's just think for a minute. Why does Hashem have so many different names? Right, did you ever think about that? There's so many different names for Hashem. And Tila, you can ask questions at any time, just so you know. So one of the reasons that Hashem has so many different names is because we understand the concept that a shem, in Hebrew, a name, depicts ma she-sham, right? What is there? What's in it? So the name has to do with the essence of this thing. So we can't talk about Hashem's essence, because Hashem is way too big for that. He has many different names, which are different aspects, in a way, of Hashem's essence that we can relate to the different names that we use. But not only that, each name is refers to a particular emanation of Hashem. So if you could imagine Hashem sort of like with rays, if you can, not that you should really imagine Hashem being anything physical, but that Hashem's energy comes to the world through certain pathways, those pathways being emanations or hashpa'ot, influences. So each one of those types of influences has a name. So let's just, for clarity's sake, two that we talk about regularly is justice and mercy. Right? So we call Hashem Elohim when we're talking about Hashem in justice. And we call Hashem Hashem, the Yud Kei Vav Kei name, the Adonai name, that we don't even pronounce actually. When we say Adoshem, we're even, that is a name of Hashem, except for it's referring to the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey name of Hashem, which we don't ever pronounce. We just substitute that name. But that Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey name, which we don't even spell, which is why I say the and in between each letter, is the name that denotes Hashem's mercy as opposed to, pardon? Shaddai is a different name. Shaddai, and if we don't want to say the name of Hashem, we pronounce it Shakai, because we can say the name of Hashem for teaching purposes, but like just like Adonai, we would pronounce Adoshem, or in Sephardic pronunciation, they say Amonai. It rhymes, but it's not the name of Hashem. Shaddai, we say Shakai. Shaddai is a different name of Hashem because it means that he caused it to be enough. So the Shakai aspect of Hashem would be the aspect of boundaries or stopping things from unfurling. So that if we understand, for instance, that this world is created through an expansion, there's a big bang, and then things expanded and expanded and expanded from there, Shakai is the power that said, enough, stop expanding. I want you to end right here because this is expanded and unfurled enough to create this world the way it is. Mm-hmm. If it would keep expanding, then we wouldn't, things wouldn't be able to hold together to make this world the way it is. So,
the letter Shem,
the letter Shin stands for that name of this is enough. And part of that is because a doorway is a boundary, things like that. But let's just think about these names. So each name refers to a different emanation or a different influence of Hashem in the world. So we do need an influence of things being enough, right? If it would just rain without it stopping, then it would all be flooded. So we need an enoughness energy. That's the energy of Shakai. Then we need a mercy energy, an energy of I can see you for who you are and your potential and where you're headed, and so therefore I will treat you differently, like we were just talking about in the class before this, a class before this, that that Hashem judges people differently based on who they are. Like we were talking about karet. Does karet fall on everybody who eats on Yom Kippur? Right? Does everybody get that? No. If it would be strict justice, if that person would be viewed through the lens of Elohim, then yeah, everybody gets karet. But no, there's other influences of Hashem. And so one of them is mercy. And mercy, rahamim, says not what have you done, but where are you going? Who can you become? So it looks at you and your potential and your future as opposed to looking at you in your past. So each name has a different influence. And there's so these are just names that we're familiar with that we use in our davening and our everyday speech. These are names, but there's so many different names of Hashem. And particularly if you open up a Sephardic Siddur or a Siddur that has lots of Kabbalistic stuff in it, you'll see different names of Hashem in it. Sometimes, if you've ever seen a Siddur where it'll write out the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey name of Hashem, but one of the Heys will be stretched very long. And inside the space of the Hey, they'll put another name of Hashem, which is not meant to pronounce. It's meant to just look at. So you'll see that if anybody has an art scroll, Machzor, from I think from Yom Kippur, maybe in Rosh Hashanah, in Birkat Kohanim, in the prayer that an individual says during the chant of the Kohanim, when they're chanting in between the words, there's a special prayer that an individual says for the nullification of dreams. And in that, it has different names that you're supposed to look at but not pronounce. And part of that is this chapter on theory. How do you use names to transcend nature? Right? So we can use the names of Hashem to transcend nature. We don't know how to do that. I personally sitting at the table for sure don't know how to do that. All we're learning about right now is that it can be done, not how to do it, right? that there is such a thing that exists in the world of being able to use the names of Hashem to affect the world. So how does that work? If you would know the names of Hashem, which only don't actually refer to Hashem, but just to Hashem's emanations, then each name is attached to a specific emanation, and you might be able to, he created a system in which by saying that name, you could influence that emanation. So let's say, I mean, we see this in Hasidic tales a lot, where a Rebbe is able to help a couple, right? A couple is childless, a widow is poor, whatever it is, and they can affect certain miracles for them, whether they conceive or whether they get healthy or whether they find, you know, money or a chassan or something. Of course, not everybody can use, but we have seen stories. We see it in the Tanakh and we see it in modern-day Hasidic tales that they're able to make some of these changes, and some of that is by influencing just slightly above nature. Now, the question is, can you always do that? And the answer is absolutely not. Hashem's still in charge. Hashem runs the world. So he did create these pathways, but it doesn't mean that we are always in charge of them. For instance, our cars have brakes. If we press the pedal, it stops almost all the time, right? When doesn't it stop? If we're on ice, right, so there's an external factor that causes the car to skid and not stop, even though we're doing what we're used to doing. We press the brakes, it doesn't stop. It's skidding on ice. Or the other time it doesn't stop is, well, two other ways it doesn't stop. One is the brakes are broken, right? So you press the pedal, but inside the car it's not working. Not that the brakes are working, but outside the car it's not working, inside the car it's not working. Or number three, you got mixed up and pressed the accelerator instead of the brakes. You think you're pressing the brakes. You press hard, but you go forward, right? So there's three different ways that you could think that you're exerting the influence that's necessary to make the car stop, but Hashem's in charge if the car stops or not. And there's a few different ways Hashem can take that control away from you by putting the ice underneath you or water, or by making the brakes broken, or by getting you confused, right? Hashem's still in charge if the car stops or not, even though you do what's necessary to make the car stop. Right? So even if you understand how to manipulate these names and say it, Hashem can still take the power away from you. Even though you're doing what you know you have to do to make it work, Hashem is ultimately in charge and can cause other things to get in the way. So so we see that there's a story of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He used to give brachas all around. And one time a shaliach of his, one of his soldiers off in London, his wife was very sick. A young man, three young children, and his wife was very sick. And so he called the Rebbe to get a bracha for her to recover. And he didn't get through to the Rebbe at that time. The Rebbe was a little bit older, and he had a secretary who screened his calls and went through it all. Anyway, the answer that came from the secretary of the Rebbe was, you should have nachas from your children. That was the bracha. So the shaliach said, that's not the bracha I want. I asked for a refuah shlema. That's what I want. Well, I should have turned this on. I think it didn't work on the phone. What I asked for was a refuah shlema, not nachat from the children. I want to speak to the Rebbe directly. So he gets, I think he either gets on the phone with the Rebbe or he gets another, you should have nachat from the children, bracha, through the secretary. So he gets on a plane and he flies to New York and he gets an audience with the Rebbe and he says, my wife is really sick. I need a bracha. And the Rebbe says, you should have nachat from your children. So that's the, he knew that he wasn't capable of using one of those names, even through giving a bracha that your wife should have her refuah shlema. He knew he couldn't say those words because the Rebbe was very powerful, right? But he couldn't use his language to give a bracha for a refuah shlema when that was not what was in the cards. You know, it was not. Hashem did not ordain that that wife should have her refuah shlema. So that he understood he can't say your wife should have her refuah shlema. He could only say you should have nachas from the children. So there are things that people can say, and then if they know that they can say it, know that they can't say it, understand how words work. That's what this chapter is about, really. Okay, any questions so far before we go to the next topic in this chapter?
Mm-mm. What was the chapter again?
It's called Theurgy. So it's in Section 3, Chapter 2 of Section 3. So this section 3, the major headline is the soul, inspiration, and prophecy. So chapter 1 is about the soul, and this is about how we use the names of Hashem. We're going to come up with prophecy next. That'll probably be in three classes. We'll get to prophecy. So I expect it to probably do today and probably the next time also to be on theurgy, and then we'll move into prophecy. Okay, I'm now going to read from the text, starting with paragraph 6. So in Derech Hashem, for those of you who are new to the call, each section, the way that we find the section Derech Hashem is with three different numbers. So this would be 3, 2, 6. Section 3, chapter 2, paragraph 6. It's not even one paragraph. The paragraphs are numbered, but sometimes there's two or three paragraphs, or sometimes even five or six, within one numbered paragraph. So now we're going to do paragraph 6, which I'll read out loud. It is known that even though overcoming the bounds of nature is one broad general idea, its accomplishment involves many details and depends upon the situations of the things being affected and each one's level. For the influences which must be brought to bear to nullify the natural order in all the desired ways will vary greatly from case to case, as will the details and conditions for how the divine names must be said. So while Hashem did give us this whole chapter, this whole concept of being able to transcend the bounds of nature through uttering his name, still there are many, many different levels and situations that come into play. It's not straight calculations that we can make on our own. There's many different things that come into play. So that's what he's continuing to explain here. In that any general principle is composed of particulars, many of them on different levels, it follows that regarding the overcoming of the natural order, how much the natural order is actually transcended also will vary from case to case. Sometimes a person or a creation is only slightly liberated from natural bounds and limitations, while other times the departure from the norm is much greater. This will be discussed further in a later section. So let's just take, for instance, we could actually use it from the negative side too, whether it's kishuf or whether it's using the Shemot Hashem. We have examples in American Indian lore of rain dances, and we have examples in the Talmud of different rabbis who pray for rain, right, or demand for rain, not just praying, but demand. We have Choni Hamagal as a specific example where he draws a circle around himself and he stands in it and he says, Hashem, I'm not leaving this until you make it rain. It was such a drought, right? So what is that? Right, that is transcending nature, because nature says, no rain right now. But everybody else says, look, it's a drought, and we're going to die if we don't have crops, and we need it, so we have to have rain. So there's two ways you could get it without nature working, right? So one, we could do it physically today in our lives. We can use if there's clouds, right? So we're still limited. Even though we have technology today that we understand how to seed clouds, we can take an airplane, fly into the sky, and drop, I don't know what chemicals dropped into clouds, but it makes clouds release their water and rain. We can do that, but we can only do that if there's clouds, if we have that chemical, and if we have gas to put in the plane, and if we have a plane, and if we have a pilot, right? Well, you need all those things to make it work, right, to transcend what nature has intended. Right? So the same thing with prayer, where saying the Shemot Hashem, you could transcend using different names of Hashem, but only if you have the person who knows how to do it and the person who's on a pure enough level or the person who's evil enough or who's able to tap into negativity, even if they're not evil, they understand the negative forces. So it could be through an Indian rain dance. It could be through Lahavdil, a prayer, or mentioning the names of Hashem in certain ways that cause rain to come. Either which way, nature is transcended and rain comes. Now the question is, how much? Right? Do you get just a sprinkling, so it's really not enough to nourish the ground? Or do you get a deluge, so there's flooding? Or do you get just the right amount over the amount of time that's necessary in order to allow the crops to grow? So you could transcend, but how much you can transcend is up to Hashem also. So that's what this is saying. There's all kinds of principles, and still Hashem is in charge. So he did create a pathway for us to work outside of nature. So there is a clear spiritual pathway to accomplish that from both negative and positive energies, but still the level, the ability to transcend, how far one can transcend, is still limited by all kinds of different factors. Okay, paragraph 7. These ideas form the foundation for man having the aforementioned power to act upon creation via supernatural means, to do great, mighty deeds that would not be possible for him through physical channels. Man is able to possess this capability because God set up the designs and systems of all existence so that all of them are interconnected, and all are dependent upon the aforementioned influences of God in such a manner that when one of these influences is transmitted, influences here with a capital I, meaning in Hebrew the hashpa'ah, when one of these hashpa'ot is transmitted through the utterance of one of God's names, it gives rise to effect throughout the entire sequence of creation. So that's important to understand too. If somebody will utter one of these names and thereby activate one of these influences, they may be thinking, I'm going to activate rain. We need rain for our crops. But they also activate everything else that goes with rain. Let's say wind and thunder. So somebody who is going to die of a huge thunderclap, you know, the impact of that sound is going to cause a heart attack. Maybe they're going to die sooner because you called the rain. Like, it influences all aspects of creation, not just what you think. Right, not just what you're calling for, or the lightning that comes with it. You know, whose house is that going to hit, or not? Or what is that going to cause? You know, the good and the bad that comes with it. You don't get to, once you touch the influence, it goes throughout the sequence of things. That being said, it happens in other ways too. So, for instance, and we see this all the time in Israel, or we don't see it, but we know it's there. You know, I read Arutz Sheva, which is news from Israel, basically from a relatively right-wing religious perspective, right-wing politically in this case, and to the right, but not all the way to the right religiously perspective. And they often have good news sections, and they often have bad news sections, and what's going on in Israel is a daily email. And they'll often talk about, or occasionally talk about, when they found a terrorist or stopped a terrorist at a border, when some border police were able to find somebody who was coming through as a pregnant woman, but really her belly was all bombs, right? And they caught her, and she didn't kill anybody. But she was going through on an ambulance. The plan was to go into Hadassah Hospital and blow up the whole, you know, that whole maternity ward, right? So that's not in regular newspapers. We don't get to see that so often. But we have to know that's Yad Hashem. That is the hand of Hashem, because it's all connected. Yes, maybe that Arab woman prayed and people around her prayed that she should be able to go and destroy Jews. And yes, maybe Hashem facilitated that they should have the money and the access to the explosive equipment that would make her look pregnant and butt full of explosives. And yes, they got an ambulance with enough gas to go through the checkpoint. But because it influences so many different things, they also gave, Hashem also gave the soldiers at that checkpoint the ability to detect that that was a bomb, not just let somebody who looks like she's in labor go through. right? So even though Jews are known as merciful, to unfortunately have to hold back, use that Shakai energy, to hold back the Rachamim energy, to see, oh, we now have to be suspicious of anybody who's pregnant. Just because they have a big belly doesn't mean there's a baby in there. It could be something else. So there's so many different influences that are so connected in so many different ways that Hashem's, it's all interconnected. So when you touch one thing, you touch a lot of other things. But Hashem does circumscribe the abilities for things to be affected. Let's see. I'm not going to get into a whole thing right now of why Hashem allows all the negative stuff, because he does. Right, there are bombs that get through, there are buildings that fall down, there's Holocausts that happen, there are pogroms, all kinds of things that Hashem does allow to happen, but it's only because really on the biggest level it is all interconnected and it is all necessary for the good, as we were learning previously in the previous class. There is no such thing. Hashem is good. So even when things seem bad, it really is to play out for the good, even if it takes multiple generations. And even if it looks bad in the moment, in the end, it really is all for the good. And not just in the simplistic view of it's all going to be good in the end, but in the much more sophisticated, deeper view, which we'll probably get into at a different time, but that we'll be able to look around and see that even the bad was good, that is going to happen. And I think I did mention earlier class, just the story of Yosef. When Yaakov finally met Yosef at the end, then Yaakov was able to look back and see, oh, Yosef first looked like he was murdered, and then we were starving, and then we were caused as a family to go into Egypt, and there was this crazy maniacal ruler of Egypt who was forcing the whole family to come down to get food. Like, he's giving food to other people. Why did he make all the brothers come down? How crazy is he that this leader of Egypt wants to see every single person in our family? And everything that looked so difficult, as soon as Yaakov realized that it's Yosef that's the leader and that every single step led to their salvation and ultimate coming into Egypt for the perfection of the Jewish people, then every single thing was good. The throwing into the pit was good. The being sold into slavery was good. Right? The being in Potiphar's house was good. Like, it's not that it was worth it. It's that it was good. It all led to the good. So we'll see how that happens. Okay, back to the text. Any questions so far, Tila?
Mm-mm.
Okay, back to the text. Did I get to the end of that paragraph? Let's see. I guess I'll jump back into the middle. This is because God makes himself accessible to all who call upon him. Oh, right, so I want to quote this pasuk in Asherah, just to remind us, Karov Hashem l'chol korav l'chol ashe k'ruhu v'yemet. Right, Hashem is close to all those who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. That's what this principle is that it's saying. That's a pasuk we read in Asherah, but it's saying this is because God makes himself accessible to all who call upon him, with each particular name, in a way that he arranged and desired. Then, depending on the nature of the particular thing requested, he makes a particular light shine and extends a specific influence, bringing about the final result on a physical level. So we've seen a lot earlier in the book about all the different levels through which Hashem works, all the different kohot and forces and angels that Hashem employs to make his will manifest on the physical level. But one of them is a hashpa'a, that influence emanating from Hashem, and we human beings can step into the middle of that process and by saying a name, create a hashpa'a to come forth and manifest in a physical way, but only when Hashem continues to allow it. Okay, there's also another theurgic concept, theurgy being that word, which means using the names of Hashem to influence the world. There is also another theurgic concept ordained by God that works in a similar manner. This, however, involves angels. All the malachim, all the angels on every level, were given the power to function in the areas appointed to them. They do not function in the same way all the time, but vary their level of activity in a manner ordained for the continuous regulation of the universe. So imagine, just as a mushel, right, that each angelic force, so we don't want to think of angels as we do in English. It can get so confusing. But a malach, an energetic being that is charged with overseeing something. So, like, for instance, there's a malach that's in charge of each species of trees, right? Each individual species has its own malach. Each individual species of animals also has its own malach. So let's just think as a mushel for a minute. Let's think of a malach who would be in charge of a kitchen, right? The job is produce lunch, right? Think of a cook. Produce lunch in the retirement home every day for 70 senior citizens, right? So that cook is in charge of the kitchen. It doesn't mean they're doing the same thing. Every day they're producing lunch. But within that, they're ordering food, planning menus, chopping vegetables, spicing things, putting it on plates, right? Learning more about nutrition. All of that is in the purview of produce lunch every day for 70 senior citizens. So the one task is feed 70 senior citizens lunch. But there's a lot of subtasks in that. So the same way a malach would have one task, it's in charge of that species. But there's a lot of things that they do within that, and they're given, in a way, their independence to function in many different ways to achieve the one task. So that's why it says here, they do not function in the same way all the time, but vary their level of activity in a manner ordained for the continuous regulation of the universe, right? So there's different malachim with different jobs that do different things. They each are tasked with one thing. We do have a rule that a malach can only do one thing, but the one thing might be produce lunch, not one thing might be chop tomatoes, right? It's not that specific. Okay. The angels, malachim, however, also have the power to function in a supernormal fashion. So we're calling normal what they do, right? But they can also function outside in a supernormal fashion within their own normal areas of activity. They can act with more strength and force than is required of them for the sake of the natural order. In this fashion, angels have brought about a great number of miracles and wonders on earth when it was God's will that such should be. So imagine, let's say, the malachim of certain trees stopping a fire, right, where a fire shouldn't jump over a certain embankment or whatever. It might be trees that actually stop it. So it might be the malachim of those trees that actually stop the fire from going. Well, it's Hashem's will that the fire should stop. So there's many different ways the fire could stop. It could be that Hashem empowers the firemen to bring enough helicopters of water just using an Oregon paradigm also, but using a Colorado paradigm, right? Whether it's enough helicopters of water or whether it's they got enough shovels to dig or whether there is a ravine or whatever it is, there's ways, different ways that Hashem could stop the fire, but one of them might be that he allows the angels of those trees at the edge of the fire to be strengthened so those trees aren't destroyed and so the fire stops there. Or let's say the angels of water that would separate the Red Sea or whatever it is. There's different things that the angels could do when it's Hashem's will. Back to the text. Moreover, it is God's will that honor be given to his name. And thus he decreed that such changes in angelic behavior could come about through the mention of his name, following a system that he ordained. Thus, when a particular name of God is uttered over any angel, which is appointed over a certain natural process, and the name is the appropriate controlling one for the influence and process in question, the result is that that particular angel is given additional power and is forced to use the additional power in the manner desired by he who utters the name. Okay, so that's an interesting thing. So let's just, he puts a little review here then. There are therefore two types of theurgic influences. The first is the utterance of God's name, calling upon God as if to be answered. Through this, a hashpa'a is transmitted from God, bringing about various results. So it's just a straight-up use of name, right? The second is the coercion of malachim through God's name. So number one is calling on Hashem directly, and that releases a hashpa'a that manifests in the world. And number two is forcing malachim to behave in a certain way by using one of Hashem's names. So it's not going straight to Hashem, but rather on top of one of his malachim, forcing them to behave by the use of Hashem's name. This causes the malach to function in a supernormal manner within their usual sphere of activity. Neither of these procedures, however, can be used in any way that one may wish. They are both circumscribed by limitations and conditions, as well as the extent and manner in which they can be successfully used. Sometimes the result itself may be impossible, and in such cases, these methods do not work, even within their usual range of effectiveness. This is very much like a purely physical effort, which can also be nullified by God's decree. Right? So thinking of, you know, putting the brakes on the car, but there's ice underneath. You can do the right thing. Oh, what was that? Are you still there, Theodore?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just making me nervous. Okay, so just like the ice can nullify the brakes, a purely physical effort that can be nullified by God's decree, so can the result of saying the right name at the right time over the right malach or the right hashpah of Hashem can be totally nullified by God's decree. The first method involving the transmission of God's influences through his names can only be used by someone who has attained a great closeness and attachment to God. We're going to get more into that in the next chapter when we talk about prophecy. The more such closeness an individual attains, the more successful he will be in making use of this process. If it is lacking, it will be correspondingly more difficult for him to achieve any results. So this is sort of like Lahavdil, somebody who works out at the gym, right? So the more one develops one's muscles, the more one is capable of doing all kinds of difficult tasks, whether it's lifting things or taking tops off of jars or doing a chin-up, whatever it is, the more one strengthens themselves, the more one can accomplish. And the harder it is for somebody who's weaker. And imagine, you know, not just somebody who doesn't go to the gym, but somebody who's getting older and weaker and, you know, their bones are starting to fall apart. Some people, some elderly people don't fall and break their hip, but rather they're walking, their hip breaks, and that causes them to fall because their bones are that weak that they just break like that. So so imagine that other end of the spectrum that you can accomplish. So the same thing spiritually. The physical is a muscle for the spiritual, right? So the same thing spiritually. The more somebody has strengthened themselves through becoming a kli for Hashem's will in the world, through prayer, through service of Hashem, through doing mitzvot, through getting their own ego out of the way, making room for Hashem in their life, then the more somebody will be the kind of tool that can use this process to influence the world. And the less that one has achieved, the less they will be able to do it, even if they learn the actual steps, they won't be able to achieve it as well. The second method, on the other hand, does not require this, does not require that level of closeness. So the second method being the method of influencing the angels by saying names over the angels. These names have been given the unique power to be able to coerce specific angels when they're uttered, and they are therefore like any other natural tool that can be used by anyone who so desires, right? So anybody, no matter their spiritual level, can pick up a pliers and twist something. And all you have to know is how to open and close the pliers and use it with a wrist, right? Doesn't matter if they're good at it or bad at it. Anybody can, or with their spiritual level or their educational level, they can do it. So as long as you know these names, the only condition is that you follow the proper procedures when making use of this method. So it has nothing to do with how you've worked on yourself, just that you follow the right order of steps in doing this. It is obvious, however, that it is not appropriate for a commoner to make use of the king's scepter. Regarding this, our sages teach us, he who makes use of the crown will pass away. Things such as these are permitted only to individuals who have worked to make themselves holy and are close to God, clinging to him always. What is more, even the holiest of men who employ these methods only for the sake of sanctifying God's name and doing his will. Oh, even the holiest of men will employ these methods only for the sake of doing God's, of sanctifying God's name and doing his will. An unworthy person who uses these methods in the prescribed ways may attain results, but he will certainly be punished for using what is forbidden for him. So we said the first pathway of using the Shemot that influence those Hashpa'ot, that you have to be close to Hashem in order to accomplish. But this pathway of influencing the angels, you do not have to do it. However, it's forbidden. But it doesn't mean that it's forbidden for somebody who hasn't achieved a level. But it doesn't mean that you can't. Just like when you achieve, when you arrive at a stop sign, it's forbidden to keep going. But each and every time it's our choice if we stop or not. Stop partially, stop completely, or just keep going, right? Completely up to us each and every time, even though the rule remains unchanged. So the same thing here. The rule is you're not allowed to see these names over the angels and coerce angels to do what you want if you're not close to Hashem. But it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means that you may not do it. So that's really considered using the king's scepter, right? The scepter being the extension of power of the king's arm. When the king points his scepter at something, things happen because he's directed it. So he has created a scepter in the world where people can use names and influence, coerce the angels. So he says you're not allowed, you can do it, but you may not do it unless you're on a certain level. People will break the rules, and an unworthy person might use these methods anyway, and for sure they'll be punished. But it doesn't mean that they won't achieve something. They could achieve something meanwhile. Furthermore, as we've already mentioned, these theurgic powers are not absolute and are sharply circumscribed by limitations seen by the divine wisdom to be appropriate. Furthermore, even within these limits, God at any time can prevent these methods from having any effect whatsoever should his wisdom deem that such is fitting and proper. So it could be that, let's say, a whole yeshiva is davening that the Holocaust should end, and Hashem says, you know what, it's not appropriate right now. Right now what we need is a Holocaust. So I'm going to completely, even though you're doing the right things, you're fasting, you're praying, you're all kadoshim, holy people doing this, I'm taking away your influence, and this is going to happen anyway. Or it could be the other way. It could be that Rashaim, evil people, are planning to destroy something, and Hashem says that, you know, it's certainly not the path I'd like to see taken, but the truth is the Twin Towers have to fall. Right? That's what America needs to wake up right now. So I'm going to put that in your hands, and he will prevent the TSA security. Well, I guess we didn't have TSA before the Twin Towers fell. But whatever, so he'll prevent security from finding those bombs, even though that through normal means they would have. So God can totally circumscribe anything at any time, even if we're doing it right. I think we should end on that because we're starting with. Yeah, we're going to end on that because the next one goes. 8 goes into a little bit more of good and evil and how they coexist at equal strength throughout creation, but then differentiates how good is actually stronger than evil. But we're going to do a little discussion of good and evil next time. But let me just pause here and see if you have any questions, Tehillah or Ayanna, on anything that we talked about just now.
No.
Oh, okay, so one extra thing I wanted to add. I made a little note for myself. So we're learning from here that names give power. So this is one reason why we are careful not to say names or to say names in order to give or to deprive power. So, for instance, when we're davening for somebody who's sick, we want to say their correct name because saying their name gives them strength. So we want to be able to say that, let me see if I can remember, there's Elisha Marifol Ben Devorah, a child in Houston, should have a refuah shalema. Right, so we want to say his whole name, not just that kid in Houston. But there's a 5-year-old in Houston with brain cancer. He should have a refuah shleima. So we want to say his name, and when we say his name, it energizes him. For the same reason, and we say names also when somebody's in a coma to give them energy to come out. We can say their Hebrew name, say it over and over to them, and it gives them energy. So we have this concept of a strengthening of energy through saying the name, which is why we're also careful not to say names that we don't want energized. So, for instance, we say Yashka instead of saying the name of the that Christians daven to. Okay, I'll just say it because you don't have to say it. Okay, fine. So we say Yashka instead. Or we don't say the name of the holiday on December 25th. Not that it's the worst thing in the world, but we don't say it. We say Kratzmich. Or December 25th, or right, or whatever. We say different names. We try not to say that name. Sometimes it's just silliness, and sometimes it's about sensitivity to names, and sometimes it really is about not wanting to energetically empower that thing by uttering its name. So what we do see from this, that's a practical application in our lives today. Names make a difference, right? Not just the names of Hashem, but saying somebody's real name does have an influence. And so we want to be careful about saying the correct name when we daven for somebody and not saying the names of negative things that we don't want to empower. So any questions on that?
I have a silly question about that.
Sure, great.
What about people whose parents gave them Hebrew names, but they don't remember them?
Right, that's a halachic question.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to try to find out as much as possible. When my guess, and you know, I think one would have to ask a rabbi, but my guess is first you do as much research as possible to see if you can find the name. And if you don't find the name, I don't know what you do. Like, let's say you have to have a name, for instance, for getting married. You have to write a name on a ketubah.
Mm-hmm.
If, let's say you want to daven for a person and you don't know their name, then you can always say Sarah bat Sarah Imenu or Avraham ben Sarah Imenu. That name works for everybody. Right? So you can use Avraham and Sarah, ben or bat Avraham and Sarah, because that's the name of every Jew. There is an essence in them that's it for every Jew. So you can use that name. I don't know halachically what you would do on a ketubah if somebody was named and you know for sure they were named and you don't know the name. I'm sure that exists. I've more commonly heard of people who weren't named, never got a Hebrew name, and so therefore they need to be named. So if their father's around, you would have them get an aliyah to the Torah to name them, even as mature adults. If their father's not around, a husband could do it, or the rav could do it, or anybody could be appointed the messenger to get an aliyah, and then there's just a formula that's read to grant somebody a name. So it is important to have a Hebrew name, and anybody who doesn't have a name should figure out how to get one, but it really is, since it has halachic implications, it actually is a halachic shaila that should be asked of a rav that could guide one in the process of making sure they either find their correct name or are called by a correct name. Any questions on that, Anna? No? Okay. Okay, any more questions, Pila?
No, it's very interesting.
Okay, great. If you find out something more or if you have a good story to tell us next time about it, I invite you to share it. Or if you have a good story now, you're welcome to share it.
I just have a question about which text is good to get
Okay. So I would get the Feldheim edition. I think it's Feldheim, right? Let's just make sure. Yeah, it's the Feldheim edition, The Way of God. The 6th revised edition, whatever. It's been printed a few times, so that's what a few people are using. It's translated by Aria Kaplan. Right, the same one. That's correct. I personally am using Rabbi Avraham Yaakov Katz's book, Pathways to the Way of God, which is out of print and hard to find. But you never know. Look it up, and if you happen to see it on Amazon or somewhere for, you know, anything under $50, buy it. But I've seen it sold at this point for in the $300 range because it's out of print and people want it. But the advantage of that book is that it is the Feldheim Hebrew, which of course is the Ramchal Hebrew, the Arya Kaplan English translation, and then Rabbi Katz's English commentary on the bottom. So it's a nice addition to have if you can. And if not, just get the regular Feldheim. I think it's like about $20 to get the regular Derech Hashem, and that's usually available. And it comes in two different sizes. You can get the pocket version or the big version. So, you could get it with the other classics. So you can buy it by itself or as part of the set. Das Tunos Derech Hashem, and what is it? Mitzvot Hasharim, probably. I think they mixed up Derech Tunos and Das Tunos Derech Hashem. Anyway, the other work is by the Ramchal. Anyway, so so you could get Mesilat Yesharim, Derech Hashem, and Das Tunos together in a 3-volume set, or you could just get this by itself. So I would get this by itself at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, and you can probably find it used, too. Look on, there's a website called usedjewishbooks.com.
Yeah, they're out of, they're shut down because of Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, no, really? Aw. Sad to hear. Okay. Then I guess you have to masturbate the art school the whole time.
Okay,
great. So we're going to end here. And next week, I don't think I'll be doing a class because the AJAP conference, I'm guessing I'll be in the middle of things. And the week after that, there will be a class.
Okay.
So we'll be in touch by email.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.